Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
How about this for a contest? The Sharps Invitational. Season-long NFL bankroll tournament. Think poker meets football. Poker meets football. Start with 10,000 chips. Put them to work on spreads, totals, parlays, even props. NFL Week 1 through the Super Bowl. Stack your chips. Climb the leaderboard. Compete for real money. Three tiers, three champs, three prize pools worth playing for. Sign up today at jointhesharps.com. That's jointhesharps.com. We get tweets, meet in the book. Y'all are great, by the way. Best listeners in the game. This is from JB Uncle Bush. Finally, the long national debate is over. SGA has been named Clutch Player of the Year. Mazel tov to everybody who had him Clutch Player of the Year. That was bettable, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nemesis Enforcer.
Heavy favorite for the last month of the season.
That's the one where all you have to do is just check the stats and you know who the clutch player is. Nemesis Enforcer. Wemby was asleep for about 2 seconds. All man needed was a pillow. Shocked they kept showing it. He also has Rockets 100% on KD being a weed head. When Bro came out not wanting to be Slib Reaper, showed his heart. Warriors were his out and he passed. Yeah. Yeah. No comment other than those were some terrible turnovers. Dell, Mind the Gap Radio. Let Nick Whalen know that my basement is available for VSiN live spots. Nick Whalen, our next guest, with a flooded basement. I guess he was showing pictures of this on Twitter last night, he was saying. We hope he's okay. We'll find out momentarily. And Ace Dick Cardano about Wishnev coming up later. He goes, we always reference Todd's intellect. We never talk about how hard he works. 0 days off the entire college basketball season, then right into Major League Baseball. Think about that. No question, Ace. No question about that. And by the way, he's up over 20 units in college hoops now, too. And Danny Burmett, Gil sounds like he's in Tennessee with them sinuses. Oh, dude, you have no idea. Nick Whalen joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, to discuss not only his basement, but the NBA. How is the basement, Nick? Are you okay?
I'm okay. Everybody survived, you know, no real personal damage, but it was a rough night on Friday. We had a lot of rain over the last week here in Wisconsin. And when the power goes out, my sump pump stops working, which means that water starts flowing into my basement. So spent most of the weekend ripping all the carpet out. And what our friend Dell is referring to, last night I tweeted my just incredible setup right now, which is a lone recliner in a concrete floor basement with boxes all over the place. One of my TVs is unplugged. It's a total mess, but look, the show must go on, guys. We still found a way to watch NBA basketball last night. And I think this is a pretty clear God gives his toughest battles to his strongest soldiers situation. So we'll be back. We'll rally.
Okay. All right. This is a very thorough explanation of your basement. We appreciate that with pumps and everything.
I'm looking at pictures right now, man. I feel bad for you, Nick. That sounds like a hell of a weekend.
All right, Nick, I'm going to ask you a question here. One of these teams, I'm coming to you from the future. One of these teams wins their best of seven first round series. One of them. You tell me who it is. Houston comes back from a 2-0 deficit against the Lakers to win their series. Minnesota knotted up with the Nuggets, beats the Nuggets. Portland, with Wemby in sort of questionable status right now, beats the Spurs. Atlanta beats the Knicks. Toronto comes back from 2-0 to beat the Cavs. And I'll throw the Sixers in there to beat the Celtics, knotted up at one apiece. Just basically going with all these teams that were dogs to begin with the exception of the Rockets, who are down 2-0. Who's the team most likely to win their series of those?
I think to me, Houston is still not out of this. That's the first thought. I really liked Houston coming into the series. I liked how they closed the regular season. There were times, certainly, where I was willing to write this team off. And then I thought they were really fortunate to line up this matchup against the LA Lakers. It is important to remember they still haven't really got a full strength Kevin Durant game. KD was terrible last night, 9 turnovers. I know he got to 23 points in 41 minutes, but that did not look like Kevin Durant. I was surprised when I checked the box score at the end of the game and he got to 23. That was the least impactful 23 points of all time. Şengün has been a total mess in this series. A lot of his production came late in the game when the Lakers were kind of a little bit more willing to just not foul and give up some baskets. So I think Houston's the team where you could see improvement as this series now moves to their home court. I don't think Luke is coming back. I don't think Reeves is coming back. That door is still open. If you watch these first two games for the Lakers, they shot 61% from the field in game one. It was one of their three best shooting games of the entire year. Luke Kennard has been on fire. Marcus Smart hit 5 threes last night. I think it's still fair to wonder, can LeBron play at the level that he did last night over the course of six or seven games. I mean, that looked like 2017, 2018 LeBron James. And you can see it right away. Like he had that play like 2 minutes in where he basically took off from the free throw line and ended up getting fouled on a dunk. Like oftentimes you can tell if LeBron has that energy right away. I don't know that I trust that will be there every single night, and they need it to be. You know, they need LeBron to play at this crazy level just to beat a Houston team that's not playing well so far in this series. So I still think the door is open for the Houston Rockets. I would not write them off. You know, Atlanta, I think, has a chance against the New York Knicks. And obviously the Blazers-Spurs series just single-handedly hinges on how many games does Victor Wembanyama miss. If he's only out for game three and then he's back, yeah. I think the Spurs still win that series maybe in six. If it's more than that, I mean, that's a toss-up.
I like that you went with the Rockets with all those. Will had texted. I don't know if we did this off air or on air. I can't remember. Will had texted 2 nights ago. He goes, are the Raptors the worst five seed in history or one of the worst five seeds in history? So yesterday I texted him. I go, not since the 2026 Raptors have I seen a five seed as bad as these Rockets. All right. One of the series that I left out of that little thought exercise was one of the games tonight, the first one tonight between Orlando and Detroit. I did not throw in Orlando as or can Orlando actually win this series against Detroit up 1-0. It's an 8-1, right? A 1-8 seed series in the East. How are you playing game two with the Pistons favored by 9 to try to even this up?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Detroit closed, 8.5, I think, for game one. And then this open 9.5. I'm now seeing 8.5 at DraftKings, some nines out there, like you said. So, you know, people aren't necessarily backing off of Detroit, but I think we still have to treat them as more vulnerable than your typical one seed, right? I think a lot of people had questions about the Pistons all season, even when they cruised to 60 wins. Like this still, it doesn't really feel like your typical one seed. And, you know, they had a worst case scenario performance, I thought, in game one, where the Magic played well, but it wasn't one of those games where Orlando came out and hit like 18 threes and you just felt like, all right, no matter what, Detroit never had a chance to win this game. Like Orlando went 10 of 34 from beyond the arc. Yeah, they shot it well from 2-point range. Banchero and Wagner were really good, but to me, that was more of a concerning performance by Detroit as opposed to Orlando playing at a level that, you know, they just weren't going to be beat. And, you know, like there's pressure on the Pistons now to win this game. You can't go down 0-2 heading back to Orlando, knowing that you don't necessarily have the roster of a typical one seed. You know, I think if you watch that game on Sunday, if you're a casual NBA fan, you haven't been locked in on Detroit Pistons basketball, you're probably looking around thinking, how the hell did this team win 60 games with seemingly Tobias Harris as the number two option? I think the number one thing Detroit has to do tonight is find a way to get Jalen Duren more involved. And this is the pitfall of having your number two option being a young big man who can't really create his own shot. I mean, he's pretty much entirely reliant on Cade Cunningham and Danis Jenkins off the bench, you know, setting him up for looks around the rim. And I thought Orlando did a tremendous job of taking him out of the game. Like he can't be outplayed by Wendell Carter in this series. That should go without saying. So I think that's point number one for the Detroit Pistons. I do look at this as a potential underspot. 218.5 is our total. Obviously, game one went under. And look, I think you look at the pace, 98.1 of game one. That's a little bit faster than I expected. Detroit, I thought, got a little bit frantic late in the game. I don't think they mind slowing things down, turning this into more of a game where they challenge Orlando in the half court. But again, it's going to come down to, can Jalen Duren actually give them contributions? Can he not be a minus 21 in 33 minutes?
So over in Orlando, Detroit, that's the play. With a total around 218.5?
No, under, right?
Sorry, under.
Under.
Did I text the producer over? I meant under. To say under. Sorry about
okay,
that.
Okay, that's my bad. Okay, okay, so under. That's why I was clarifying. I was like, what did you mean? Under 218.5.
Yep, I'm looking now. You're right.
All right. What about OKC and Phoenix? We're, again, OKC's a 17-point favorite now in game two. We're showing 16.5 on the board, but we're seeing some 17s out there as well. Yeah. This total is 215.5.
Yeah, and I think I like the under here as well, guys. I don't really see the path for Phoenix playing a whole lot better offensively. It's like you basically need the Thunder to take their foot off the gas, which I guess is theoretically possible. But you know, we saw OKC do the same thing to Memphis in game one of round one last year, where that game was just over by the end of the first quarter. They won by 30 plus. And then game two was also a blowout. It wasn't as extreme. I think they actually won it by 17, which makes tonight's line a little bit more interesting. But you know, Phoenix scored 84 points in game one. They'll probably likely do better than that tonight. They shot 35% from the field. They did hit 13 threes on 39 attempts. But with Phoenix, I just wonder, like, where, you know, who do you look to and say, all right, this guy will play better? You know, it's like you got 23 out of Devin Booker, and he's going to be just swarmed by all these great perimeter defenders for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think this is a very tough series for Booker to go out and get 35 a night, even if he wanted to. Jalen Green, same thing, you know, played really well in the play-in game. I don't know if you could count on that when he's being hounded by Caruso and Cason Wallace. You know, they just take the defense to a different level in OKC. I don't know that we're going to see Mark Williams tonight. All of a sudden, that means that you're relying really heavily on Oso Iguodaro, who has his moments, but is really a complete zero offensively. He had no points on three shots in game one. So 17.5 is a big enough number that I'm not really willing to approach that. But I do think we see OKC locked down once again defensively. You know, we could see, you know, maybe a slight reduction in the three-point production for the Thunder. They were about average as far as number of made threes in game one, but they are a team that's not overly high volume.
Thank you,
and we
Nick.
Saw that over and over in the playoffs last year.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Nick. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. You know what Todd Wishnev loves more than anything? When I read tweets at the top of his segments.
That's right, he does.
He gets delayed a little bit. Let me just read a few. It's from Donnie Miller. Had the opportunity to take my 0-3 Reds attendance record on the road to Tampa. Ultimately decided to stay here in Cincinnati. Part of my handicap to stay home was helping your March-April wager. Now I'm debating if I should hit the Tigers series this weekend. Donnie has sent me a QR code for his Venmo because he's it's his non-attendance that is creating this.
Yeah.
Dan Groeschel, if Fezzik declaring a bet dead is a good luck charm, I have a whole portfolio of futures I'd love for him to pounce dead. Oh, to pronounce dead, he meant. And James Fessler, updating my numbers game ledgers, just wanted to confirm. Shark noise is okay. Dog noise is not appropriate.
Yeah, let's keep it real, James. Yeah, come on.
What he's referring to was your shark stuff before.
Yeah, and I held back barking.
Would you like to repeat your shark noises that you had the? That
I don't
week?
Remember how it goes.
Remember? Yeah, that was good. That was the one you workshopped before. That's right. Todd Wishnev, ladies and gentlemen, he is the guest star of Wishnev Wednesdays. He's the star of Wishnev Wednesdays. He's a guest on this show, but he's the star of Wishnev Wednesdays. There you see him, purple. Angry, not really angry. That's when he does his play-by-play, his folk play-by-play on the Megapod. He is the star of the Megapod. He is the star of the Showtime docuseries Action. And after a 180-plus college basketball season, dude is like, watch this, 20-plus units baseball. Am I correct, Todd? Is that what's happening?
As usual, you don't get it right. I was over 30. I'm now plus 29.64.
That was great. Ooh, 20
That's
plus.
Much closer 29. To 30 than 20, but thanks for shorting me. It sounds like something you would do. Another thing you did
yes.
was when we were on the thread with me, Stevie, you, Chris, and Willie, who I call SCF12, standing for Sycophantic Connecticut Fatso, who goes 1-2.
Yeah.
Because he's sycophantic for whatever Stevie says. When I was on that thread today, you asked, oh, are you going to come on? Are you going to answer your question? You're going to be like Stevie. Are you going to come on for two segments? I answered the question when it was asked. You didn't read the answer. So then you accuse me of doing something only Stevie does, which is you ask him a question and he ignores it on the thread. Now, being accused of being Stevie is not something that I appreciate. I will take a public
apologize
right
to
now.
You. I will not compare you to Steve Fezzik ever again. There you go.
Thank you
accept?
Thank
okay.
You.
All right.
Glad
we got through that. People, that's all we do is bicker on this thing. Okay. Let's do this. This is 30 for 30 with Todd Wishnev, everybody. A man who is 29 units plus, nearly 30 units is what that means, by the way, in case you're curious how numbers work. Nearly 30 units to the positive in Major League Baseball.
By the way, I'm not sure I'm going to stay doing good in baseball. It's still too early to say.
Okay. Hey, as long as you bring that mic towards your mouth, Todd, if you could, so we can hear you loud and clear. We want to make sure we hear everything. There we go. Okay, let's do this team by team. Let's go with the American League first. And I'm curious, this is a great sort of capsule Todd Wishnev thoughts on these teams. We won't spend a lot of time on any of them, but we'll give your thoughts. Let's start in the AL East. Let's go with the New York Yankees.
New York Yankees like to strike out a lot. They also like to walk a lot. So if you're on the fence on a strikeout prop for the opposing pitcher, they may get the strikeouts, and they also, same thing with the walks. They're going to get the walks. They bullpen with Bednar at the end is a little suspect, but they're the Yankees. They'll probably be okay.
Tampa Bay Rays.
Tampa Bay Rays. Simpson. You got to see Simpson. If you haven't seen Simpson, you got to see him. OJ Simpson's in left field, or I forget where he played. I think he's in left field for Tampa Bay. And the guy is fast. So early in the season, people were not realizing how fast and how good he was, because if he hits a grounder to short, it's 50-50. They're going to throw him out. And you might get a prop. They were having his over 0.5 hits at like minus 180 early in the season. I was like, that's way too low. Now they've started to adjust on him, so now it's a little tougher to find him. But I like how this team is managed. They don't have tons of talent, but they win the games they're supposed to win. So if you can get him as a dog in a game that's not really, like let's say it's a plus 120-ish dog against another team that's maybe not as buttoned up, Tampa Bay is not bad.
By the way, not O.J. Simpson, Chandler Simpson, just to clarify if anyone was confused.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. The O's, the Birds, the Orioles.
The Birds, they like to strike out a lot too. The Birds like to strike out. That's their story. The Birds have some bats. They're kind of nondescript. They're kind of middle of the pack. I don't really have anything great to say about them, but they do like striking out.
Blue Jays.
The Blue Jays don't like to strike out. The Blue Jays this year, they are not striking out. Now, however, they make the opposing pitcher such a low number that sometimes they've been going over anyways because it's so low, but they do not strike out the Toronto Blue Jays. They don't hit. That's another thing. This is not your last year's Toronto Blue Jays team. They are not hitting the ball, and they are really, and their bullpen is also kind of suspect. So, beware. This team is not the team of last year.
And bringing up the rear of the AL East, currently the Red Sox, 9-14.
They just stink. They can't hit. They strike out a ton. The bullpen ain't great. I don't like anything about this team. Bello is one of the starters. I mean, that guy stinks. I don't like this team at all.
To the AL Central, the Cleveland Guardians, 14-11. Always a thorn in my side.
Cleveland Guardians, what I would call a UConn-ish buttoned up baseball team. They don't have a lot of talent, but they do everything they can with said talent. They have Jose Ramirez, who is just unbelievable. He gives you 110% on every at bat. They don't strike out a lot either. And they just seem to win the games they're supposed to win, and they steal a couple they're not supposed to win. I like this team, even though they're not really that good.
Random Barry Lamar Bonds note. Barry Lamar Bonds never faced the Cleveland Guardians, nor the Cleveland Indians.
Real.
Minnesota Twinkies.
Neither did Joe Gibbs didn't either.
He did not. It's very true. Nor did Iga Świątek when he got on the Twins.
No. Oh, Twins?
Yes, sir.
Minnesota Twinkers. I would say they have a very big disparity on when they strike out right-handed versus left-handed. So keep an eye on that. Their pitching, the Ober's been good. Ryan can be good when he's going against a lot of right-handers, but it's kind of in the middle. I don't like their bullpen. This is just a team to be careful with.
Okay. Detroit Tigers, who are 500 right now, 12-12.
I love their manager, AJ Hinch. They will win games that you wouldn't expect them to win. They've been under hitting, so that's why they don't have a great record, but I would suggest that they're probably going to get it together.
White Sox, not as bad as most thought they'd be, 9-14.
They love to strike out, but if you can get the White Sox as a big plus money in a game, let's say they're playing another nondescript AL club, like, they're playing Texas or the Athletics or something, and you can get them like plus 158 when both pitchers don't look that great. And sometimes the White Sox pitcher ain't that bad. They can surprise people. like they did last night against Merrill Kelly. They were plus a big number and they just blasted them.
Kansas City Royals, a lot of people loved them before the season. Not so much. 8-16.
Why? Why didn't a lot of people love them? Why? I don't know. Their bullpen is absolute garbaggio. It's the same old can't hit with Bobby Witt, who's not even been doing that good this year. Salvador Perez looks like he's 180 years old. The team can't hit. They stink in every way. I don't know why anybody thought they were going to be good.
AL West, I am very high on the Athletics. They're 13-11 atop the AL West.
They can hit the ball. This team can hit the ball, but they also strike out a lot. Lately, not as much, but they do strike out a lot. They can absolutely hit the baseball. I don't know about the pitching, though. I don't know if there's going to be enough pitching. That's going to be the problem.
Texas Rangers, who I have a season win total over on at 83.5.
This team likes to strike out a lot as well, and I don't like their hitting at all, actually. If you look at that lineup, it's just, it's so meh.
It is.
There's just nothing exciting at all. So they better pitch their way to wins. And if Eovaldi and DeGrom don't do it and Kumar Rocker or whoever the hell else they trot out there doesn't do it, they could be in some trouble because I just don't think they have enough bats.
What about the Angels?
The Los Angeles Angels are a little surprising to me. They can hit the baseball. Again, not a great bullpen, especially against lefties. Be careful betting against the Angels against lefties because they will typically hit left-handed pitching. They didn't last night against Patrick Corbin, but they've got a lot of good right-handed bats in there. They're hitting the baseball. So, you know, I think they've been a lot better as far as, you know, they still have their same pitching problems, but they at least can hit.
Mariners and Astros to close out the AL.
Mariners are a disappointment. They strike out a lot as well. They do have some good pitching, so I think they could probably turn it around. And the Astros are just absolute dumpster fire. The bullpen is unbelievably atrocious. They can't really hit, or they haven't been hitting, even though Yordan hit. The pitching is just a disaster area.
30-30 with Todd Wishnev. We'll go to the National League, get his thoughts on that. The man's up nearly 30 units, just shy. Next on A Numbers Game. Coming back. Still to come this hour, Paul Spohr on Major League Baseball. And we have to continue the 30 teams in 30 minutes with Toddy Wishnev, who's almost up 30 units.
There you go.
In his early season baseball.
It all worked out well.
This kid is unbelievable. Yeah, it did with a 30.
Yeah, 30s. Yeah.
We've had a great totally week planned. Of coincidences. Jason Weingarten returned on 420. A lot of 30s right there. By the way,
there's only a lot of tweets about that.
I don't want to annoy Todd. It's only one tweet. This is from Evan Klein, who says, Toddy boy woke up and chose violence today. Todd Wishnev joins us once again from Pittsburgh, PA, the site of the draft tomorrow night. Todd, you are getting out of town you're moving out of central Pittsburgh for this tomorrow.
You can't go to the Rivers Diner. They won $500 at the park. If you think I'm paying $500, I ain't doing it. I'm just not doing it. I don't care what you're throwing in. I don't care if you're throwing in Permanis for free. I ain't doing it.
He ain't doing it.
I think I'm going to have to drive out to Greensburg to the live casino. They have a FanDuel casino out there.
Okay. Yeah, get out of the muck. By the way, you look great. You losing weight? What's going on?
Lost a couple pounds. I got my blood sugar from 276 to 149 in 20 days of no carbs.
There you go.
Nice. 7 pounds.
Way to go, Todd.
Playing some tennis.
Okay. I like it. By the way, before we dive right into the National League, you have any plays for us today? Any pre-floppers?
Yeah, I like the over in the Cardinals-Marlins game today. Oh, I got a really good number, 8.5 plus one, over 8.5 plus 108. So I played that over. The Cardinals' bullpen is a shambles, and they are hitting the ball.
All right, back to the National League. Let's start the National League East. The Atlanta Braves at 16-8.
I'm enjoying the Braves. I've won their team total over a number of times. People, I think, are sleeping on them because they didn't do well last year. But if you remember the years previous, this team was a hitting juggernaut. So you've got all the regular guys back. Plus, you got Baldwin, who's been a real good hitter. Love that Baldwin kid. You got the Michael Harris. You got all these nice looking hitters along with the big, you know, the big boppers like Acuna. I think they're going to hit the ball a lot.
The Washington Nationals, 5 games back at 11-13.
Great hitting team, surprisingly great hitting team, especially against right-handed pitching because you got that Wood kid and you got Abrams who just rake and the rest of the guys, there's a bunch of other guys who can hit. This Nationals team is for real with the bats. Their relief pitching is abysmal, so it will lead to overs. Be careful with unders with the Washington Nationals.
I wonder how long Abrams and Wood will play for that team. By the way, would you play the Braves -150 to win the division?
I played them +155. Oh, -150. I don't know. It's around, right around, maybe.
Okay, maybe, he says. That's a good answer. Marlins are also 11-13.
The Marlins are spunky. You know, the Marlins are spunky. They try hard. They look like they're trying hard, at least. And they're going to sneak up and win some games you don't expect them to win. They don't strike out, by the way.
I just don't know if Sandy Alcantara will be there after the trade deadline.
He's not that good. He's overrated. Ooh,
really? Okay. Phillies.
Don't like him.
According to Phillies fan Joe Pita, he says they look old. What do you think?
The Phillies stink, and they cannot hit the ball. When you have three hitters and then the rest of the lineup is people like Marchand and guys you never heard of, this team cannot hit the ball. The bullpen's been surprisingly good. But if you can't hit, you can't win. Sorry.
If you can't hit, you can't win. No truer words have ever been spoken. And then the New York Metropolitans, we have not mentioned today.
Oh, my gosh. This team really can't hit.
Lost their 12th in a row yesterday. The Mets fall to 7-16. No team that has had a 12-game losing streak during a regular season has ever made the playoffs. The Mets.
Well, losing Soto has been a real disaster. This team is just an absolute joke hitting-wise. And they have a surprise, though, at pitcher McLean. I love this McLean kid. He gets his strikeouts every single game. He gets them quick. Yesterday, I had him over 6.5. He had 7 strikeouts the first 3 innings. I love that kid. You know, he might even – I was looking at him. He's 27-1 to win the Cy. He might be worth it. I mean, he's probably not going to win it, but 27-1. Wow.
Sure. Checking to see if Mason Miller pitches in the National League. Ah, yes, he does. Okay.
I grabbed Mason Miller when you guys were talking about it.
There you go.
Like at 40-1 or something.
That was my number, yeah. NL Central, beginning with the would-be or presumptive March-April champ Cincinnati Redlegs.
I think you're going to have to be burning sage or doing whatever you need to do in order to get the Reds over the finish line here. This team is the four-leaf clover team of all time. And this is in April, they've won about 100 games they didn't deserve, including 3 in Minnesota last weekend. Their bullpen has been surprisingly good. They can't hit a lick, though. They cannot hit a lick, this team.
Best bullpen in all of baseball. Best bullpen by ERA.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, in all of baseball.
I didn't even know that. I was just saying it based on the fact that their bullpen seems to be pitching great. I didn't even look at the stats there, but yeah. That's interesting that you said.
Well,
that.
While you and that other guy that I'm not supposed to compare you to are too busy saying what a luck box they are, they're busy playing really good baseball as well.
I didn't say what he said, that you could never win in a million years.
That's right.
I just said you'll be very fortunate to win.
Cardinals, who I believe you alluded to before, or you don't like them so much.
Cardinals bullpen is a shambles. They have hit the ball a lot more than you would think they would. That Herrera kid can hit. Burleson can hit. You got some hitters, but that bullpen's terrible. The starters are terrible, too. Everything's terrible. I don't know how they're 14-9. It's a miracle.
The Chicago Cubs, who have a great run differential, and are sort of sneaky good here at 14-9.
The Cubs are good. The Cubs can hit the ball. The Cubs, you know, I can't really say that much. I think the Cubs are going to be fine. I think they're going to be fine.
Okay. Brewers.
The Brewers are my, like, UConn special, buttoned up with no talent but somehow win games. It used to be with the bullpen they would do it. This year the bullpen's crap. And I can't believe they're 13-9, but it just shows how buttoned up, you know, clutch hitting when you need it with all those guys that somehow, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers are the swinging bunt team of the Major League Baseball. Somehow they just are able to hit grounders to the third baseman that are too slow for anyone to get, and they get on first every time. So it's just unbelievable. It's uncanny.
for those scoring at home, Todd really. He emphasizes teams that are buttoned up. That's a big thing for him. He likes a buttoned up team.
My buttoned up teams don't beat themselves. Let the other team beat itself. That's my buttoned up type team.
Buttoned down, not so much. Buttoned up, he likes that. And
I don't like buttoned down.
Your Buccos, your Pirates, who got off to a blazing start, but now have kind of fallen back to earth a little bit.
I mean, the problem is that they want Osuna to have a big year, and I just don't think he has it in him. He's come to life a little bit. And O'Hearn was a nice pickup, but it's still the problem is going to be the bats. The pitching has been outstanding, but, you know, can they score enough runs? That's the problem.
And they score enough runs. Okay, to the National League West, and, of course, that begins with the Dodgers.
The Los Angeles Dodgers are doing the Los Angeles Dodgers shtick. They don't seem too interested in winning games, but they're going to accidentally win just because they're so talented. And, you know, it's the same old thing. They do strike out a lot, though, and they walk.
The Padres, who now are tied with the Dodgers, not only for the best record in the NL West, but the best record in all of baseball, they're 12-1 to win this division. Yesterday, I was like, that's a pretty good price. I would take that. What do you think about the Padres?
The Padres are like the old Brewers, where they have a tremendous bullpen, and they find a way to snag games. Like yesterday, it was 0-0 in the fifth inning, and the Padres had like one out in the top of the sixth or something like that, and they were minus 135 at the Rockies. I said, I have to take that. You're telling me this is going to be a game between the bullpen of the Padres and the bullpen of the Rockies, and they're only minus 135? And, of course, they scratched a run, and then they made it stand up because they've got that real nice bullpen with Morahan and Mason Miller and all those guys. This is a good scrape it out team. I like this Padre team.
Again, Padres first 1-0 win on the road at Coors since 2006 for any team in Major League Baseball. You were looking at 1-0 wow. Coors results earlier.
Yeah,
you remember how many?
I was just mind blown. There's only been 12 all time.
Home or road.
Home or road, 8 by the Rockies, 4 by the road team. The other 3 times it happened by the away team, it was in 2006.
All 3 times all in 2006. Times. And it was no Mason Miller. They had Mason Miller resting last night. Diamondbacks.
The Diamondbacks they're just so hard to figure out. Last year, their bullpen was terrible. It's a little better this year. I like their hitters, but is there enough hitters? I love Marte. I love Carroll. They're good, but they're going to come up short.
Good, but they're going to come up short. That sort of sounds like that might be the theme for this next team, the San Francisco Giants.
No, they're not good, and they're going to come up short. This team is horrible. the guy who roots for them is difficult. This team can't hit a lick. It's unbelievable. There's not a single guy who comes to the plate, and you're like, oh, well, maybe he'll get a hit. No, maybe Devers. You know, my friend in the sports book calls him Devers. I'm like, his Devers, not Devers. Devers, maybe. Everybody else stinks out loud. This team can't hit at all. Look for first three unders when they have a good starter and the other team has a good starter because no one can score a goddamn run.
Devers, not at all what they had hoped for in San Francisco thus far. Yeah. And then finally, the Rockies.
Rockies have been spunky, a lot spunkier than you might have thought. And, you know, I'm not saying their bullpen's good, but they've got a zillion arms out there that they can throw at you. And once in a while, they can hang on to a winner. They just beat the Dodgers 2 games in a row there, which was, and I was kicking myself that I didn't play the Dodgers in game 3 because I was like, there's no way Dodgers are going to lose again. But anyways, the Rockies have been a little bit better than you would expect at 9-15. And it's because they're kind of spunky. By the way, they love to strike out. Unfortunately, the opposing pitcher's total is always very high. But, you know, if it's somebody with a big, like, strikeout kind of thing, he's going to get it against the Rockies.
Ladies and gentlemen, Todd Wishnev, 30-30. And I would grade him 29 out of 30. I think that 29 of them were objective, and then there was one team there recently in the last.
What did I get wrong?
Couple minutes.
What did I get wrong?
I thought you were a little harsh on the Giants. I did.
I thought Joe Gibbs was great out of the bullpen.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it. Paul Sporer next on Baseball. It's a numbers game at Visa. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino. Don't forget about our spring special. Check this out. VSiN Pro spring special. You get full access through August 1st for only $59. Here's what you get. Daily best bets from VSiN experts, real-time betting splits, AI-powered props and matchup tools, 24-7 live video and full show replays, plus our Kentucky Derby betting guide. Derby.
Let's go.
I mean, we got the draft tomorrow night. The Derby's 10 days away. For crying out loud.
Mike Savich on a week from today.
Savich, baby.
Locked him in.
VSiN.com/subscribe for all of that. Our $59 VSiN Pro Spring special. Tomorrow on the show, not only Zach and Crack back in studio for our standard unscripted, but we will talk NFL draft because it may not be available in Nevada, but it will be available elsewhere. Mike Renner from CBS Sports will join us. Former Bachelorette contestant, which he never likes me to bring up while he's on air. So I'm going to bring it up while he's not.
The little things that Gil hears once and never forgets. Mike Renner being on that show.
I mean, how many guests do we have that have been on The Bachelorette?
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible.
It's not like Wishnev was on The Bachelorette, for God's sake.
Yeah, you're right. After like 6 years of us bringing it up with him, yeah, he's kind of shied away from that.
Well, he's also married, I think. That's the maybe problem.
Probably some of that comes into play.
By the way, I think I just landed on something. Let's get Wishnev on The Bachelorette. Throw in a curveball. And then Matt Brown, our own Matt Brown, co-host of Ready, Set, Bet, our old Ready, Set, Bet, and our old Primetime Action co-host will talk NFL draft with us tomorrow. So looking forward to that. Let's talk some baseball, though, with this gentleman. Paul Spohr joins us from Austin, Texas. He works at Fangraphs, is the host of the Sleeper and the Bust podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Spohr, S-P-O-R-E-R. Paulie, good morning. How you doing, man?
Morning, Gil. I'm well. How are you guys?
Doing very well. You and I were talking about something off air. We're sort of a stream of consciousness. We're talking about how the Reds crushed Steven Matz, historically BVP, batter versus pitcher, and it showed yesterday in the lineup. It's not something I usually lean on, but it really manifested yesterday. And we were talking about Ke'Bryan Hayes went yard. If Ke'Bryan Hayes goes yard, man, they really must own you. And then you said something. You're like, yeah, you know, he's a great defensive player, but like you got to be able to hit. The Giants have an interesting predicament with Patrick Bailey. Have you been following this at all? Patrick Bailey, yeah. Their catcher, who is widely considered, I think not widely considered, but sort of affirmed as the best framer in all of baseball, calls all right. The pitches, just a great catcher, great backstop to have. And, you know, has had moments in his career where he's been okay hitting. There have been stretches where you're like, oh, Patrick Bailey is on it right now. But he's atrocious right now hitting the baseball. What do you do if you're the Giants? You just have to go with it?
Yeah, I think you do. And I think catcher is the one position where you can afford to do that. I mean, he's a career 75 OPS plus, so you're already scraping 25% off the top there of an average player. Again, you can have a little bit lower thresholds at catcher. He's seven this year, seven OPS plus. So he's 93% worse than a league average guy. Oof. Now, the defense is still a plus. And even in the ABS universe, there are still strikes for him to steal because teams only have two challenges. They can't just challenge everything forever. So he still has that defensive value, but seven is untenable. I mean, you know, Hedges is probably the guy that everyone thinks of as the best defender who can't hit, Austin Hedges. And he's a 53 for his career. Jeff Mathis is another guy. And I want to say he's even a little bit higher than that. 48, actually a little bit lower. So that's kind of the not gold standard. What would that be like? The aluminum foil standard of hitting for great catchers defensively. Again, about 50. And that's still bad. That means you're half a league average player, but you're so good defensively that we can take it. Again, seven's untenable. I think they're going to give him enough time to figure this out, though, and kind of let him play through it. It's still a 186 BABIP, and even a bad player doesn't really deserve a 186 BABIP.
Right.
So they're going to keep playing Bailey. He should be fine. But obviously you can't live in the single digits. And if it's around 25, 30 come Memorial Day, I think they do need to make a decision at that point because his defense cannot be giving you enough value to counter that.
All right, let's talk some division bets. I'm curious. We haven't had you weigh in on this. Padres are now tied with the Dodgers. Last night, Padres win 1-0. The rare 1-0 win at Coors, which hasn't happened since 2006 for an away team, where it happened three times in 2006. Those are the only four times, as Kelly just mentioned, in Coors history where an away team has won a game 1-0. Padres win, Dodgers lose to the Giants. Giants played three in the first and holds the rest of the way. So it's 16-7, 16-7 atop the NL West. The Padres are 12-1 to win the division. That's got to be a bet, right, Paul?
Oh, I think it's certainly worth a look. Absolutely. Because, I mean, we talk about it literally all the time for several years now that the Dodgers are just not going to be pressed to go crazy in the regular season. They just don't have to. It doesn't benefit them to do that. Their team is built to be ready later in the season. Why do you think they barely blink at losing Diaz? Because
right.
He's only going to be out for a few months, not the months that matter to them. Yeah. Obviously, you don't want him to be having long-term injury that he can't come back from. Like, there's limits to this, of course. And they never want their guys to get hurt. But there's a reason that they don't flinch. They don't really care because it's all about October. You know, they won the division by 3 games last year. Do we really think they were only 3 games better than the Padres, who I think were second last year? No, of course they weren't, but they don't have to push and they won't. Meanwhile, I think the Padres are a team that'll push. They're trying to get every win that they can. It's all in right now. And I don't think they can afford to kind of tap dance around. So yeah, I think it is a look at 12-1. Dodgers are still the best team, but you have to consider how they play and where they push. And the division, while important, is not the most important thing to where they'll bend over backwards. And once that number gets to a certain point, as it has with San Diego at 12-1, I think it comes into play for sure.
Let's go to the NL East. The Braves out of the game. I mean, the Braves have a 5-game lead already above right. the field here. They're -150. Would you make that bet to win the division?
Yeah, I don't mind that. It's interesting. I'm stalling a little bit just because, you know, they do have the 5-game lead, as you mentioned, despite how atrociously Phillies and Mets have played, right? Mets eating all the brunt of it. The Phillies been over there sucking wind almost as much. They're on a lose 7. They have one more win, and they must be loving that the Mets are just eating all the national hate right now. I'm sure in Philly it's pretty intense from their fans. But yeah, both those teams playing so poorly. The thing was, Atlanta got smoked so much by the injuries coming in. I was already kind of pushing them off to the side for the Mets and Phillies, and they've done nothing to take advantage of the fact that all of their pitching staff in Atlanta has been upended, basically, except for Sale and Grant Holmes and Raylo, I guess. They have, you know, 3/5 of it, but then the rest of it has been turned upside down. Bryce Elder's basically been pitching like Schwellenbach, so they haven't missed Spencer Schwellenbach, Strider coming back. So yeah, I mean, take the long route there to say, I do think that is interesting there for the Braves at -150, because I think the Mets and Phillies will be a lot better, but will they come all the way back up? That I don't know, because the Braves aren't going to, you know, lighten up on the gas. In fact, they should get better as the team gets healthier. Yeah, I think the Braves are the favorites right now, and they deserve to be treated as such.
So many of these division prices are super interesting. Let's go to the NL Central. Let's go to the NL Central. Okay. Well, okay. Yeah, I guess I'm committed now. Cubs are +160. Brewers are +275. Pirates 4-1. Reds 4-1. Right now the Reds are on top, but it's a slim lead over the Cardinals and Cubs. Is there a bet there?
Yeah, any non-favorite, because I do think it is wide open. I thought it was wide open coming into the year, and so I'd probably just pick my favorite, non-favorite, if you will, get a little plus money on there because it's such a wide open division. You mentioned the Brewers +275. I mean, how do you ever look away from them? What they just keep doing in the regular season. They're kind of the opposite of the Dodgers, right? They're so good in the regular season that so many things work over the .162 for them that they continue to have these great regular seasons. Then come October, maybe it doesn't work as much because you got to string hits together and those little edges that they get that add up over .162 maybe don't show themselves in 7 games. I still think that they're very much the favorites in this division, but not by a huge lead. Cubs, I'd like a lot more if they hadn't lost so much of their rotation. Pirates was a team I did pick to make the playoffs before the season, so I'm not just Johnny come lately on this. So I'm interested in them. And then, of course, the Reds have the lead, like you said. And if their offense gets turned around, as they have been the last few days, I think they have the talent to be there. They finally made the playoffs last year. I really like the Reds club. The only one I couldn't really give a lot of love for is the Cards. And I know they're 14-9 Cards fans. And I will pat my back as saying I was one that was saying that they're not going to be terrible this year. I think a lot of people were putting them in the bottom of the league. I didn't quite see that. I still don't think they have the horses pitching-wise specifically to really compete in this division for the Cardinals. So I know they're playing well right now, but that's the one team I probably wouldn't get down on.
Give me this. I'm going to leave this open-ended. Give me the one team here, still early going of the Major League Baseball season, that you think is under the radar that is way better than most people think they are.
I mean, do the Pirates count? Because they're only 13-10 and they're last in their division.
They count.
But they are, like, they added some real offense this year. The O'Hearn and Lau been showing it right away. Marcelo Ozuna hasn't necessarily gotten it going. But believe it or not, you know, as awful as things were off the field for him with the domestic violence and everything, he is a team leader. It's a real crazy dichotomy because you wouldn't expect a guy that's having such an awful thing happen off the field that he deserves to be chastised for, turn around and be a team leader on all the teams he's been on. He wasn't running out of Atlanta because of that. It's because they moved on from him. And in Pittsburgh, again, despite that, he is turning this team around, creating a winning culture there. And I don't know how much, you know, how many wins that translates to, but this team is a lot more competitive than they've been in recent years. Skeens needs some company. He needs an Ashcraft, a Bubba Chandler, a Carmen Majinski. They've got to give him some support in the rotation. It can't just be him, but I like the Pirates as the up-and-coming team.
A vote for the Buccos for Paul. Paul, always a pleasure. Really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, gentlemen. Paul, take care, y'all.
Paul Sporer, everybody. At Sporer on Twitter. SPORER. FanGraphs, Sleeper of the Bus podcast is the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.